The regular February meeting of the Cambria Community Services District Board of Directors will come to order. Please rise and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance to our flag and country.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Let the record reflect that all five board members are present, so we do have a quorum. Our district council is en route and has been delayed, so I'll turn to the general manager and ask if there's a report from closed session.
We were given some general direction. Other than that, there was no items or anything decided upon during closed session last month.
Nothing reportable, correct?
Nothing reportable.
Okay, thank you. Are there any additions, deletions, or pulled consent calendar items for the board to consider? Yes, Director McKinnon.
Would it be possible to discuss? I'm sorry.
The general manager has one for us to consider.
I do. This is an item that needs to be added to your agenda. It's an item of urgency. We were served with a claim this week by J.E. Lindsay, Inc., case number CV098052. We need to add that conference with legal counsel on your closed session as item C.
Board members, in the absence of having our general counsel with us, I can advise you, having some familiarity with this area of the law, that it requires a 4/5 vote of the board to add it as an urgency item to the agenda. I have looked at the claim. We need to formulate a response. The person who has submitted the claim has given us only 15 days to respond, so it's not a matter that can wait until the next board meeting. So on that basis, I would consider it to be an urgent item. Is there a motion to add it to the agenda?
I so move.
Is there a second to the motion?
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to add the claim as described by the general manager to the closed session agenda. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carries 5-0, so the item is added. We'll move on now to acknowledgments and presentations. I believe there are none for today, so we'll move directly to special reports. Is there a representative of the Sheriff's Department here today? Apparently, they're out busy busting crime today. That's a good thing. Under managers and board reports, we'll hear from the general manager first.
All right. I was going to look out in the audience and see if I see anybody from the PROS Commission. They said there might be a representative here to report, so I'll give that some time. You have my general manager's report. I just remind the public about the upcoming cleanup week for the spring. Is April 13th through 17th. This is an opportunity to add on any extra trash, recycling, or green waste to your regular trash day, and it will be picked up for free. If you have any larger items or any items that can't be contained within the typical garbage trucks, you can call Mission Country Disposal and make arrangements to pick that up for a nominal fee. And this is for customers within the CCSD operational area. Well operations, you can see Brian's report that we have started working on our annual maintenance of our pump at SR4 as a result of this recent rain event. And we have Santa Rosa now being shut down. He did make a little recommendation in here that those customers who have water softeners using sodium chloride or potassium chloride solution for recharge might want to take this opportunity to set them back. For the water supply hardness. If you have any questions, you can contact Brian Bodie in the Utilities Department. He reports the rainfall is still below average, but the wells are full and water is flowing to the ocean in both the San Simeon and Santa Rosa basins. Looks like we'll have enough water to get us through at least till the beginning of summer, and then we need that late rain in April or May in order to carry us through to the next rain season. We've got some operational maintenance issues that came up with regard to one of our pumps in the headworks of the wastewater treatment plant. So staff is working on an unexpected maintenance item that's going to cost about $8,000 to replace a function of the pump, and he's looking forward to probably having to replace the other two here pretty short. So that's ongoing right now that staff is dealing with. You'll see on Brian's last page, he took some photos of the clearing around the wastewater treatment plant that's occurring that Chief Mark Miller has reported on and apparently is going very well and successful. And I'll let Mark get into that when we get down to the fire chief's report, just to give you a more up-to-date report. The district engineer's report is typical update information on the projects that are kind of moving along. The DSAL, as he reported last month on an update, he's working on the administrative draft for the initial investigation and analysis plan. The Rodeo Grant Stewart Street pump station, he's continuing to work on edits. Not that we're working at a snail's pace, but we don't have a whole lot of money, but we're waiting on getting this next budget year to where we can get full head heavy into that project. Bob also attached some information with regard to the California Department of Public Health and some potential funding under the Federal Economic Recovery Funds for drinking water projects, which is an exciting opportunity for the CCSD, except we have to be shovel-ready with our projects, and we have to have already been completed with our Prop 218 process, and we don't know that we're going to be able to make that for this grant application or this application process deadline unless we expedite everything in the next 30 days. I think that report deadline is, or that application deadline is in the next 2 weeks, Bob? I don't remember.
27th of August is when we have to do our initial application to the California Department of Public Health.
Okay, so 27th of August or February?
February 27th.
Oh, okay, you said
week.
August.
Okay, oh, sorry, so yeah.
I was going ahead of yourself there, Bob.
I don't know how I said August. I said okay, thank you. Yeah. My mind
all right,
was on
so
February
27th, which is next week. So,
right.
But he did give this information just in case we are keeping an eye on it. There's any extensions or we see that we're going to be able to get something in time, then I appreciate you doing the research and finding this opportunity for us. And as far as the fire chief's report, I'm going to hold that for just a minute because I'm going to let Mark finish up by reporting on at least the progress in that project that we're doing for clearing. The finance manager reports that there were no disbursements in excess of $100,000 and reports our lay fund balance, which is our reserves that are represented by general funds, of $4.3 million. And that's all. I'll turn it over to Mark and let you provide your update.
Chief Miller.
Thank you, Tammy, Mr. President, Board of Directors. Probably the big thing that I have to report on today is our shaded fuel break project, which is in response to some complaints that we received last year in reference to clearing on CCSD property. We were able to receive the grant funding. We're moving forward with that project, which is roughly parallel to Highway 1 and Santa Rosa Creek Road and Plymouth Street. It's about a half a mile shaded fuel break project, all done totally with grant funding that we received from the Fire Safe Council. A couple of items that I wanted to mention. I've received a bunch of phone calls from the Fire Safe Council in reference to the cooperative work relationship that has been going on with Ben Bohr and Carlos and their work with the team out there. They're receiving such rave reviews that we've been moved into a pretty commanding position to receive grant funding in the future. And so I just received nothing but positive comments on their teamwork and their cooperation with helping the team out there. So That helps us out a lot. Another issue, maintenance issue with that project, is we've taped that out with fire line tape, and I have sent a letter out to the neighborhood there in the immediate area, and we've followed that up with a mailer asking that people do not cross the fire line tape or interact with the crew that's working in there. That's an inmate crew, and we had an incident yesterday where an individual jumped the fire line tape and ran down and accosted one of our employees down there and was making a scene and totally interacting with the inmate crew that they're not supposed to be even anywhere near. So we've got a real issue with that. And, you know, I'd like to reiterate again that when you see fireline tape that asks you not to go into a certain area, that you respect that and try to follow those rules. They're there for a reason. That's about all I have on that project. Let's see. We had a meeting this morning with the stakeholders, the Forest Committee, members of the Fire Safe Focus Group, the local contractors, weed abatement contractors here, CAL FIRE, our agency, CCSD, in response to the last year's defensible space ordinance. And basically, we have adopted a position on the fire department and the CCSD to where we do not want to pursue adopting our own ordinance for defensible space here. We would like to just continue with enforcing the regulations that are outlined in PCR, Public Resource Code 4291. We are working in a cooperative effort with CAL FIRE to do the inspections both on vacant property and improved parcels, and we're hoping to open up the communication between everybody in town and be totally transparent with that whole issue to hopefully avoid a lot of the angst that we saw last year and maybe get a lot more lot clearing done and a lot better job in everybody's mind, and instead of fighting about it so much in the community. That's our goal.
Could I ask a quick
worthy goal, Chief?
You just referenced the public code just now.
Yes.
If people want to look it up themselves, do you have a website they could go to, or is it on the CSD? You
know? Right off the top of my head, I'm not going to be able to put that out there. We do have I do have copies of the full code in print at the fire station, and I can come up with a website if anybody. If they want to give me a call, I could supply that info. But we have the actual ordinance printed, and we have the layman's version of all of that in informational brochures at the station. The CAL FIRE folks brought those over for our meeting this morning and supplied those. So if anybody needs that info, we can definitely supply it.
And you have office hours over there for someone wants to stop by pretty well.
Yeah, it's anytime, 24 hours a day. There's our station is staffed unless they're out on a call. So
thank you.
What was the code number again? Public Resource Code.
Public Resource Code 4291.
Okay. And Chief, CAL FIRE is part of the stakeholder group that you've been interacting with, right?
Yes, CAL FIRE currently has the authority over improved parcels in the community to enforce fire code. We enforce the ordinance that governs the vacant parcels. So in combination between the two agencies, we can do a good job to cover all issues involved, which is to try to provide homeowners the opportunity to get the defensible space that they need around their home, which is the issue. So
I'm glad the jurisdictional issue has been defined. It's been very confusing in the past, and that's a major step forward.
Yeah, that I think the lines became a little bit muddled when we were looking at the ordinance. I think that
you're right.
All of those, hopefully all of that confusion has been cleared up with all the stakeholders in the community now. So I'd like to announce anybody that's interested in looking at our annual report for the fire department for 2008. I've put some copies on the desk in the lobby. It's a document that basically encapsulates the activity through our agency over the last year, to include our fire responses and what we're all about as far as the training hours we put in, our public education and that type of thing. So those are available, and there are also copies available at the district office as well.
Good.
And that would conclude my report. If there's questions.
Director Clift.
Chief Miller, on back up on the clearing, the grant was from the Fire Safe Council, but part of that grant is us providing funding for the continuing maintenance. Will that be a line item in your budget or resource or?
It will likely be in facilities.
Facilities?
Yeah, facilities and resources.
And is there any idea of what estimated? I know that's a.
We're not near that point right now. You guys will know first on the Finance Ad Hoc Committee. So yeah. I'll have to work closely with Ben once they're finished with actually the hard labor. So.
Okay.
I can tell you that it's not going to be nearly the amount that it is to do the initial clearing. Because the follow-up on it to maintain it is basically just maintaining the annual grasses, the flashy fuels that would grow up. It wouldn't entail any of the, you know, any of the heavy work that's being done there now.
Okay, so. Thank you.
Thank you, Chief. Oh, another question. Director Chaldicott?
Thank you. You had a busy couple of weeks, I guess, with house fires and so on. I heard the last one was electrical. And I was just wondering if you'll bring back some heads up for the community if you see things there which we need to be aware of.
The last fire that we had over the weekend on Stewart Street, I believe that the cause there is being looked at as food left on the stove without, you know, leaving the home and forgetting to turn the burners off on the stove. You know, I could urge everyone to try to remember to do that, but I think everybody is, you know, aware of the potential for a house fire in that situation. I think the lesson that we can take away from the house fire on Stewart Street is that there was a tremendous amount of foliage around the house and trees that were totally wet because of the recent weather that we had this weekend, and very nearly, I mean, if it would have been the dry conditions that we had a month ago, that fire would have jumped right into the canopy. We would have had a major situation. We were lucky on the timing of this one, but the defensible space thing works not only to protect the home from a approaching fire that's coming in the wildland, but it protects the wildland from a house fire where it could get out into the canopy and affect the rest of the hill there. So we are very fortunate about that. I don't know if you have a chance to drive by and look at it, you can see where there were trees that were right up on top of the structure there, that it was a really densely, dense tree area right in there, and it would have been a real situation for us. So
couple that with some wind, and it's particularly treacherous.
Mm-hmm. I was just wondering if possibly next month you could bring some pictures so we could show the audience, you know, just what the potential is for the damage and destruction.
Yeah, we could definitely do that.
Okay, thank you.
In fact, that would be a good lesson in defensible space, that particular house where the foliage had grown up so densely in close proximity and actually onto the structure itself.
Yeah, it definitely is a clinic in how things can happen, for
you
sure.
Bet. You bet. Any other questions of the chief?
The district Tammy? Clerk looked up the address for the public resource code. It's http://www.leaginfo.ca.gov. You can go there and pick whichever code that you want to look at from the California State website.
And actually, you can Google just California codes
and that number, and
it will come up.
Just three last little items. Just a reminder that our former fire chief, Bob Putney, is going to be recognized by the County of San Luis Obispo next Tuesday, February 24th at 9 a.m. I know President Sanders said that he's going to be attending. Several of us will be too, so just one last little send-off for him. The letter that you directed us last month to send to the California Conservation Corps, the president has signed that, and that was mailed. And then just lastly, the applications, the federal applications, were timely submitted to the Feinstein and Boxer's office in time for the next federal fiscal year for some appropriations for our desal project.
And it does appear as though the California Conservation Corps has escaped the budget acts. At least that was the last word, although it may still be a moving target.
Hmm.
Okay. Good. That's good.
Good. Could you repeat the Paul Putney thing?
Director Shaldicott, go ahead.
Could you repeat the thing for Bob Putney, where it is and what time?
I apologize. Okay. Yes, it's at the Government Center, the Slo County Government Center, yeah. And it's in the chambers or for the County Board of Supervisors. It's at 9 a.m. because it's a presentation, so it's one of the first things. Not necessarily his, but he's among the presentations for that morning.
Thank you. Any questions of the general manager?
I have just one
yes,
comment.
Yes, Director McKenna.
And it goes to the issue of the repairs at wastewater and shows the fragility of our budget for 08-09. We can plan, but it's very hard to, with all the maintenance issues we do have on our plate, to see that $8,000 is going to become $24,000. And then, of course, then you have the filters on the water side as well. So I think we have our work cut out for us to not let the operation and maintenance issues be pushed aside again for the next budget. Just a comment.
Thank you. Well stated. Any other questions of the general manager? Hearing none, we'll move on to member and committee reports. Let me begin by reminding the board members that I will be going to Washington, D.C. the first week in March to meet with Congresswoman Capps and Senator Boxer's staff and possibly the Corps of Engineers, all related to legislation regarding the proposed desal plant, appropriations of money for the project, and some possible further amendments to the Water Resources Development Act that have to do with funding for the desal plant. And I'll provide a full report to everybody when I return. By the way, in the interests of budgetary considerations, I'm using a ticket that had been paid for last year that we couldn't use. So there's no additional impact to the budget. Are there any committee reports that any board member would like to apprise us of at this juncture, or would you prefer to wait until March? Director D'Amico.
Just a question. I had circulated or sent to you and to Manager Rudock the PowerPoint presentation on utilities.
Yes.
Do you consider that useful maybe at a workshop, if we're going to set a workshop, or do you want to use it as a public meeting to sort of prime the issues and discussions?
Let me just say I think it is an excellent piece of work product. It's very, very professionally done. When I saw it, I was really tickled. In fact, I was blown away. It was very, very well presented, very understandable, very professional-looking production. And I think we should be using it for the public presentations when we get to the budget hearings and so forth.
Good. No, that's I would be ideal for that.
In fact, I was going to suggest, Director D'Amico, that since you put it together and have such a grasp on it, that
the two of you ought to be making
okay.
Tag team.
That's good. Excellent.
Can I?
Director Clift.
I loved it too, and I thought it was great. But can I also get it without all the blue background? It eats up all the ink in my home printer.
Uses up all the ink. Right?
Yeah. It will wipe me out.
Takes forever to.
Yeah,
he's a boom.
So if you'd also put a water, because I like to print it off to be able to read it, type of thing. So if that's available, I would love to see that. One idea on the Finance Committee is if directors have particular areas, or if some of us have areas where we might have some concerns about different things, I don't know if it's, and our attorney isn't here, I don't know if there's a problem in terms of if a director had a particular issue to email I'm concerned about this item. Does that present a Brown Act problem or anything like that, or should it go to the general manager?
It probably doesn't, but out of an abundance of caution, why don't we make sure that the district council is apprised of that issue and give us some advice, just to
and
make sure.
And the safety is sending it to me, and then when we meet as a committee, be happy to share it with you guys.
And that might work out, too, because there are times I know when you, if two of us are sitting down or the manager's sitting down and we put together a budget, and then all of a sudden it comes here publicly and you don't, you know, it might be better to have some input ahead of time if there's very specific areas that a person is concerned with.
Certainly. Yeah, much more expedient process, certainly, but we'll get the necessary advice from legal counsel on that, Director Cliff. Any other? Yes, Director McKinnon.
Point for Frank. Which is first? I loved it as well, except for the black ink. Show me how to go to the white. But you have six criteria. What's first?
In terms of,
I mean, I would have my view that safety would be first. Number three.
Well.
But I would like to hear, you can't have all of them still be criteria without having one that's
one of the things that we've talked about, and I think we're the public.
Let me interrupt you for just a minute. Can we please not have some discussion? If you have something to say back there, please step outside. We can hear you up here, and it really disrupts the meeting. Thank you. Go ahead.
Peter and I's purpose was to take expenditures that we saw were listed and part of Brian's presentation and to categorize them so, if you will, people who aren't familiar with what is the functionality of what you're trying to do. And we have the six categories of work. I didn't want to take that next step. I mean, when I ran a utility, I would make those decisions, but I want to present it to the public, and because people have your perspective of safety.
Well, wouldn't that be always first, though? I mean, would we want to advocate
what you need to do
else?
Is to look at, my perspective, is that you look at the predominance of the issues. In other words, if you have a project that meets all six criteria, in other words, the weighting system is another issue. I just wanted to make sure that each project, to me, was categorized correctly, and obviously staff can look at it, and we can have discussion on what the category is. But if you have a project that meets all six, even though there's another one, which was safety, that probably the other one's more weighty than the other. And that's the purpose of having multiple categories. You can weight it. To me, even five categories and one without the safety and one has safety, somebody's got to make a decision. Safety may be something that needs to be addressed and would be addressed, but you can also address it in the means of protocol and the operations. You can do other ways to do it. But to keep the plant operating is our fiduciary responsibility. We have to keep the treatment plant operating so that a project like he's doing now all of a sudden rises a lot faster than an item. In other words, continuity of operations and water supply in a tank for fire safety, where does that lie? And it's a discussion. I'm not, and
but
again,
even if he breaks his leg,
that's why you had to do it in a workshop. And I appreciate, President Sanders'
decision. But we will have an opportunity to evaluate these criteria and rank them as well. That's the
purpose of starting the discussion.
Absolutely. This is not locked in concrete.
No, not at all.
I'm sure.
Two man's good thoughts.
But it's
excellent.
But it's a very, I think, very well thought out, substantial beginning. It's a good launch pad for the process because what it does is it focuses your attention on the priorities and the means for establishing the priorities. And your discussion is a good example of how it tends to crystallize everything. Yeah. So what is the most important thing? You know, or is it an amalgamation of things that becomes the most important? It's a very, very, very good job, both of you.
Let the public see what that decides.
Absolutely, but again, it's a terrific point of departure. Any other committee reports?
A minor thing. Frank, you said let the public decide, but we're the one that take the responsibility. So I guess we should decide, frankly, on that. But yeah.
Okay. No further committee reports. I do have a request to speak on this item from Elizabeth Bentenhausen.
Thank you very much, Mr. President. I was aware of your hearing my muttering back there, and I wanted to clarify that right away because I had no idea what report Frank had created, of course, but I was a little concerned that you all knew about it and were all discussing it. I was just trying to find from somebody back there what in the world this report was and for what purpose. So I'm very pleased that the report has happened and that you're all applauding it, and I really look forward to seeing it. Thank you.
It will be out soon. Thank you. I have no more requests to speak on this item, so we will move now to the consent calendar and the item that was pulled from the consent calendar, which is item number 6A. Director McKinnon.
Several questions. I'll just bring up three of them. Innovative Concepts went from $7,000 to $18,000 in January. What are they? What do they do? Is that the software firm or the website firm?
Well, I'm trying to figure out where the $18,000 are you talking about from this monthly expenditure report?
Yeah.
I have $5,441, so I don't have $18,000. There are independent contractor who takes care of maintaining our IT.
Okay.
All of our technology.
All of your technology.
All of our web-based programming, all of our computers, software, hardware. And in that big month, I'm just guesstimating because I don't have that report in front of me, that expenditure report, that could have been when all of the new software and hardware was installed. And connecting it back up and ensuring that it all worked. It could have been when we hooked up to fiber optics. Some of that could have been thrown in there, too. I don't know, because I don't know which report you're looking at, and I don't have it in front of me.
But they are responsible for all of your IT.
All of it.
Armitage.
Could I just clarify something, by the way? The dates are the dates the check was written, not the date of service, right?
The check date, that's correct.
So in other words, it may be spread over.
No, because you'll see the dates of service, particularly with Innovative Concepts, they spread it out and say January 2009. Leland Armitage takes care of all of our radio controls and all of the, so for our two-way radio communications for the fire department, water and wastewater, emergency personnel, and the like. Is there anything else that he might do, Brian? I know you manage that contract.
And also the radios for fire safety.
Yeah. Fire.
And is it typical that the repeaters fail so often, or is it just a upgrade or what have you? It just seemed like, you know, repeater, repair.
He has a tendency to bill all at one time.
Okay. So, it's, again, as Peter said, over a period of time.
Right.
Okay.
Some of those go way back to when we had the tree hit a tower and broke one of our towers, our main tower, and we had some radio. The whole tower has been replaced, but it's taken over 2 years to get it done, you know, different parts of it. So.
Thank you.
Yeah, we're getting a little feedback in the audio system. Okay.
One more, and this is for the general manager. With the budget approval, are we now in a better sense going to get the grant money from Bianchini grant?
I would think it opens it up a whole lot better than it did before, we'll have to wait and see. That's the approach that we would take in getting those funds in.
I know Merle and I are very concerned, so we're going to be right there.
Yeah.
But that should be good, the fact that the budget passed. Okay, thank you.
Yes, Director D'Amico.
As a follow-up, I think, on the expenditure reports, it's monthly reports. This is really the check register in a nice, orderly fashion. But I think the point maybe that we're trying to raise is that is there some way we can get a year-to-date on a quarterly basis or even a six-month basis? Because, you know, I don't want to die 1,000 cuts. So when you say, you know, what's in this month, what's that month, if we see that Armitage or Davidson, when you look at the end of the year, is $70,000 or $80,000. I think we got to do some cost-benefit analysis of what we're doing.
The quarterly report's posted. We just did the second one in January. Okay. So we do the quarterly. They're out on the website. So
okay.
We post them, and he did it before last meeting, as I recall.
Okay.
So we do them quarterly.
So that's the third quarter of this year?
Second quarter
of the fiscal year.
It runs a month
okay.
behind the end of the
Very quarter. Very good. No, I'm just trying to find out where it is.
But the quarterly report doesn't answer Mr. Gringo's question.
It sounds like he's – Frank, you're looking for a line item.
Line item. Cumulative.
By vendor or –
Well, a vendor cumulative.
Isn't this report generated out of your system?
Yeah, this report is.
And then can't this report do a cumulative through?
Nope.
It's a month-end report.
Yep.
Okay.
It's month-end
right.
vendor, and
Even with this requires several hours.
Microphone, Alan. Alan, the microphone. Yeah, this report is not just popped out of a machine. He has to do a lot of work to get this in this format so that it's readable and in a format that's easy to understand.
Well, I guess that's another discussion then, because to see computer upgrades, software hardware upgades in $18,000, $20,000, $25,000, and then find out the software we're using to try to manage a $6 million, $7 million enterprise can't generate a report that essentially a QuickBooks can. And, I think we got to realize that, I hate to say this to an accountant, but the magic of accounting is pretty well gone now that about 80% of the population of the country can use QuickBooks. And it's very disturbing to say that if I need to get Armitage billings to date, you're saying somebody has to manually do something?
Well, I can find out what's been paid to any vendor call up that vendor, and it goes back actually 3 years, and print that out. It doesn't total it. That would have to manually be done.
Okay.
And I'd have to go through thousands of vendors to do that for a year.
Yeah.
Is there a way to do it all at once? I'd have to look. I've never been.
Oh, no, I'm not saying that you look into the software we have. I'm trying to establish from what I have heard for the last 3 years, listening to what's gone on about this system, that why we have a defective system. Because this is defective as far as I'm concerned. I think our audit accounting is here. I don't know if he's seen this kind of system still being used, but I really have a question as to why we have it.
Yeah, I would not say it's defective because that sends the wrong message to the public as far as I'm concerned. It is not as user-friendly as some of the Windows-based programs because it is still a somewhat DOS-based program.
Right.
But we have completely competent, qualified staff running it. It's just that you don't necessarily get everything that each one of you wants or any member of the constituency wants. So we're using it to the best of our ability based on previous direction.
Never question the ability to do what you're doing. My question goes to essentially a system of productivity.
Yeah. Let me make a suggestion.
It goes into the whole finance issue.
Yeah, I have trouble balancing my own checkbook, so I'm hardly one to talk. But until we get a fix on this issue, and I tend to agree with you, Director D'Amico, it seems to me that there ought to be some sort of a piece of software out there that could help us out here. As directors, of course, we get hard copies of this printout every meeting, and perhaps in the interim, until we do get fix this, we need to look at the bigger expenditures and then aggregate them ourselves from month to month to see what the bigger picture is, and are we spending too much on one particular area as opposed to another, and gets to your point of trying not to die by a thousand cuts. Exactly. Director McKinnon.
Well said, but I do think that we have to pursue a financial summary of some sort every month that can be as gross as revenue and looking at personnel cost, operating costs, total operating costs, and any exceptions. And that's what we're dealing with. Is there any huge exceptions that we're now going to have to accommodate one way or the other? But it's something perhaps we'll discuss in one of our ad hoc meetings.
Yeah, the finance committee. But I think
it would be good. I think it'd be wonderful for the public as well to see how close we are achieving the goals that we set out to do.
Very good. Director Cliff.
One last. I was asked by a constituent, and just so that for public knowledge, there's an item in here of payment of union dues. That's accumulation of taking from their paycheck and then forwarding one check, right?
Yes.
That has nothing to do with our.
No.
We're just a pass through on,
that's right.
On that. Okay, thank you.
Exactly.
Yeah, one thing I was just going to clarify, we do, as far as the budget's concerned, when there's a variance over a certain amount, that comes to the board at any rate. I'm just direct.
Well, he reports in his finance manager report any expenditures over $100,000, right. Then the major ones. And then in the quarterly report, you see the variance over what was budgeted and what are actuals, right. Through the time period that he reports, depending on which quarter it is, and then what the variance is.
So, in fact, the ones we've discussed, if they're out of the budget range, we're going to hear about it at any rate.
And it gets back to philosophies. You know, are you a line item budgeter? Are you a bottom line budgeter? Okay, so if you're looking at things in a line item perspective, it's a different perspective than some of us who have been in operations for a long time that are bottom line budgeters. As long as it fits within what was budgeted and there's nothing that is outside of the realm of the purchasing policy requirements, then that fits within the budget. So like this wastewater expenditure might fit within the budget because they're spending the time doing this repair, they might not get to something else that they have to do, and it might fit because of the bottom line. So they've got items in the O&M that they knew they had to do, but now they're distracted fixing this pump problem, a pertinence, and so they may not spend something else, and it may end up equaling out, so to speak. So
there's a difference in opinion.
Let me just say, for the time being, given the deteriorating state of the economy, obviously paying very close attention to our expenditures has to be a very high priority. We have declining property tax revenues. We have certainly not robust water sales. That impacts both operations budgets. So sharpening pencils and paying close attention to the bottom line is absolutely critical right now. It's always critical, but it's particularly critical right now. My sympathies on this issue are with the two directors who have been harping on this for some time now, and I would suggest that the Finance Committee take a hard look at how we can get a better handle on the month-to-month expenditures and monitor those line items where we tend to have more expenditures than in others. I'm not suggesting that we look at every single line item because that could become a full-time job for somebody. But there are possibly areas where we can cut back some, eliminate some, and I think that would be...
I totally agree, and that's managed by exception. And that's when you see something blowing up, it doesn't necessarily affect the bottom line because you might have an offsetting saving somewhere along the way. But it's an exception. And if you don't take care of it, it may in fact blow the bottom line. So there's a difference, and I think that we can, the general manager and Alan and Merle and myself, we can discuss that.
Yeah.
Could be helpful.
This is my comments are not in any way intended to be a criticism of the staff because there are certain management concepts and philosophies that have been put in place that may need to be put aside during the kind of economic crisis that we're faced with right now, where close attention to every expenditure is even more important than the norm. So,
could I?
Yes, Director Chalmers.
I sense that we may be backing ourselves into a cul-de-sac because, I mean, take this pump at the possible $24,000. Do we call a board meeting to say, yes, guys, go and repair it? Or we let them go and repair it? You know, that's what we'll end up doing. We'll be having a lot more board meetings.
No. Absolutely. Yeah.
But I mean, that's what it sounds just
here. No. If you had that as a what I was inferring, that's not at all true. I'm very concerned about the operation and maintenance issues and full speed ahead, but it will have an impact, and we have to be aware of it, and we have to compensate for it some way or another. So in no way am I saying coming back to the board to do what is necessary to keep the water flowing and the wastewater being taken care of.
But I sense from the general manager's discussion that that's what she does because this project comes to the fore and other projects fall behind, mm-hmm. you know, because that's just the amount of manpower she has to do the work anyway. So mm-hmm. it sort of compensates for itself. I just don't want for us to be literally on their back saying, spend this money, don't spend that. Just, or the worst part is if they goes and spend it, and then we say, you shouldn't have done that, you know. And
well, we work
all
within the purchasing policy.
Yeah.
So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I think it's incumbent upon the Finance Committee to maybe set some parameters and some guidelines and how we're going to go about this. And if it becomes a major policy issue, you can put it on the board's agenda. It mm-hmm. may be something that can simply be done internally that results in a better reporting mechanism. And so we, I think, would leave that to the Finance Committee to wrestle with.
There is just another thought. We've lost one staff member in the finance group, you know. So we're asking possibly for more reporting with less staff. So it's a contradiction. Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Any other questions or comments on the expenditures report? Director Cliff.
Move acceptance of the consent.
Thank you.
Excuse
is there a second?
You know what? Before you guys take action, Art has something to say since
yes.
he just showed up.
Hello. I've been traveling for the last 27 hours to get here, but are you on the consent
yeah.
calendar?
Yeah.
Yes.
I have a conflict regarding item B.
C.
C? I'm sorry. So despite just getting here, I'm going to leave the room for
you
a while.
Can, yes. You can step out. Thank you. Okay. All right. It's been moved to approve item 6A, the expenditures for the month of January 2009. Is there a second?
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Is there any discussion on the motion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. The general manager will now read the balance of the consent calendar.
Okay. 6B is to approve the minutes of the Board of Directors meetings for January 8th and January 29th, 2009. And 6C is to adopt Resolution 09-2009 authorizing appointment of district council.
Move approval.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to approve the balance of the consent calendar. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. There are no, yes,
I'd like to mention
General
that
Manager.
Tim Carmel is here of Carmel and Nakasha. So I'd like to introduce him if you'd like to come up to the podium. He is the one
yes.
that you just approved his contract, and he will be our district council in the next couple of weeks. Tim?
Thank
Mr.
you very
Carmel,
much.
Welcome.
Thank you, President Sanders. I do appreciate the board's confidence in both the firm and in me, and I look forward to a long and fruitful relationship.
I'm sure we will have one. Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
And he'll be around today on his dime. Did you like sure. how I put that in the public record, Tim?
See, that's inflation. It used to be on his nickel. Now it's his dime.
Right.
Okay, there are no hearings and appeals, so we will move to regular business under item 8. And the first item under regular business is the comprehensive annual financial report for fiscal year 2007-2008. Madam General Manager, is there a report?
Yeah, and thank you. You know, you'll notice this year that we are calling it by the industry term, which we all call it CAFRA. That's the acronym for Comprehensive Annual Financial Report. In previous years, we've always called it your annual audit, okay? But this is so that we're speaking the same lingo, and if anybody else is out comparing what we do here in Cambria and other communities or cities, counties, it's this annual report that gets accomplished. I have just a few changes that need to be made, and particularly it's to the management discussion and analysis. Very, very ministerial, but I want to mention those before we get into the report. You'll see attached to your staff report the draft MD&A, which is the management's discussion and analysis, along with the auditing documents or the CAFRA. But if you'll turn to page Roman numeral 5, so the V at the bottom, there are just some issues with some parentheses, okay? So let's correct those. Understanding this is a draft document, it's published in advance, and so if you go to the bottom, under revenues, expenditures, and change in fund balance, the second line, which says total expenditures as of June 30th, 2008, you see that 4.224335 number in parentheses? Delete those parentheses. Right next to it, as of June 30th, 2007, the $5.5 million, delete those parentheses. And then go to the line right below that, other financing uses. As of June 30th, 2008, the $1.1 million, delete those parentheses. As of June 30th, 2007, $2.2 million, delete those parentheses. And then the other change is on the Roman numeral page VII 7. You'll see in operating expenses. As of June 30th, 2008, $3.7 million, delete those parentheses. Under June 30th, 2007, $4.2 million, delete those parentheses. And over in the increase-decrease column, the $444,148, put parentheses around that number. And then just a couple of lines down in the non-operating expenses, the $217,217, June 30th, 2008, delete those parentheses. And as of June 30th, 2007, the number $270,323, delete those parentheses. And we'll get into some of that discussion when our auditor, Bob Crosby, gets up to make his report. You'll see that the annual budgeted amount for the services by Crosby and Sendrich is $18,500. We haven't yet received a final billing because this is one of the final actions he takes before he finalizes the audit document, is to make a presentation to you and let you know and reports back to you what the issues were or what he discovered. So you'll have that attached. You'll see that he's offering a non-qualified opinion. He'll explain that to show that everything looks fiscally good, okay. And I'll at this time turn it over, and Alan and Bob and I will be available for questions after his brief presentation. So, Bob, I saw you walk in. Thank you for coming today.
Mr. Crosby, welcome.
It's nice to be here to take a little vacation from tax returns.
Nice to see you.
I'm sorry about the parentheses. That's what happens when they leave it up to an auditor to do the editing. We tried to make it conform with the rest of the report, so... The management discussion and analysis typically is what it is. It's a management discussion and analysis, so we're not even supposed to get involved with that. But we tried to make the fonts match and be consistent. So, anyway, it's a pleasure working with the staff at Cambria this year. We were here, what, 5-6 years ago doing the audit, so it's nice to be back. The financial statements, I trust everybody's had a chance to get used to the new format. This new format's been around several years now, so we try to make it as easy as possible to read the financial statements. And that way, questions can be answered and people will know exactly where the district sits as far as their financial outlook. The first part, as we discussed earlier, was the management discussion and analysis. Like I said, we don't really get into that too much except to make sure the numbers are matching our numbers. It's basically management's way of discussing issues that aren't necessarily clear in the body of the financial statements, and that's the tool that is now used to do that. We don't get really involved with this financial statement until we get to the independent auditor's report, and that would be on page 2. And like was already mentioned, the independent auditor's report is essentially an unqualified report. We do have two little exceptions at the bottom, but those are normal because of the new format, and that's discussing the management discussion and analysis and the budgetary comparison. So as a result, we have to put a disclaimer on that because they're present in the report, and we didn't actually put full auditing techniques to make sure that these numbers are in conformity with our audited financial statements because it brings in other documents. So all we're doing is just reviewing them and looking at the numbers, making sure they're conforming with our numbers. I don't know if that's, is that clear? I've got puzzled looks on your face, but this is normal. Believe me, it's normal. So as a result, this independent auditor's report is a normal report. There are no exceptions. There's no disclaimers or no adverse comments that we have made in this report. So in other words, you're clean. Page 3 and 4 are the new portion of the financial statements. I say new. They've been around for several years. But this is the gist of the district, all summarized on two pages. This is the governmental activities. So these reports are still present in the report after these two pages. But these two pages represent essentially your balance sheet and your income statement for the whole entity, all on the accrual basis. So everything's conforming there. Now, if we look at this statement, unlike some of the other governmental entities that we're watching in the news, Cambria is very strong as far as their statement of net assets, or in other words, balance sheet. If we look at this, now this is in the new format. It's a new format, so I'm not allowed to do anything to change this to show like current assets, current liabilities, like you're normally used to in a for-profit company. But we can still look at this statement and see that just looking at the current assets on the top part and applying them to the current liabilities on the bottom part, in the liability section, the district nets out very strong as far as its current ratio. This is good at a situation where we're in as far as the economy, not knowing where it's going. There's unknowns out there. We don't know what costs are going to be involved with things like outside pension plans. We don't know how well LAIF has done with your investments this year. We've read reports, but I haven't seen anything definitive yet. I don't know if anybody in district office has seen anything yet. But these are unknowns that are out there, but your district is strong enough to weather the storm, it looks like. And this is important in today's day because a lot of these governmental entities are not strong right now, and they're going to be hit with these extra items this year, lower property taxes, that sort of thing. And as a result, they may be hurting. Your agency is very strong. So I don't know what's happened since June 30th, but up to June 30th of 2008, it's very strong.
Question. What are the depreciation rules that you use for reporting the net depreciable capital assets?
What we use is what they call a book depreciation, and it's based on a straight line depreciation on the assets, depending on the type of asset.
So what about water infrastructure assets, for example?
Okay. Any questions concerning the statement of net assets? I saw the little bit of a adjective in there. I'm supposed to give a brief report today. I don't know what the other agenda items are.
I think Director D'Amico has a comment or question.
No, you're saying you want only questions on just the asset issue?
Any questions you've got.
Yeah. Okay.
Fire away.
I've got four.
Uh-oh.
One. No, I don't. The first one's really not your issue. Is it? Is it? In your experience, since this was a close of business June 30th, is it normal that it takes 8 months to get a report to the public finalized?
I think that there was some transition. I think the transition was between changing auditors.
Am I to take that as a no?
No, I've got to go to another board meeting today.
Okay. So, now, you said since your comment, I want to make sure that the public understands, your comment was, this is my work product as of June 30th, 2008, and you look robust or, you know, it's good. But for the last 4 years, we have had a continuing business comment by each of the prior auditors, which said that deficit spending, significant losses in enterprise funds, and if the district continues to incur these deficits, it will be unable to meet their ongoing obligations. How do you rectify those prior statements this June 30th? And since you haven't finalized it, you do realize that the rate case was rescinded, and therefore the $400,000 loss last year in the water and wastewater, our business enterprise, as you call it, is probably continuing this year. But yet you're giving us the statement that we have a robust organization and we're in a good financial position, and yet our outlay from transfer from the government to the business was over $1 million in your own audit.
Okay, I'm on the first page of the government-wide financial statements, and that's the balance sheet.
Right.
Okay, we haven't got to page four yet.
Okay.
Okay, and on page four we will see those deficits. The problem with the deficits on page four, if there's too many of them, then it will eventually affect the balance sheet on page three.
Right.
Okay? There are two things we look at as far as going concern on any type of entity. The first thing is looking at the balance sheet and determining, first of all, how is the current rate? This is the statement of activities. It goes sideways. This is an interesting report. This is the suggested format for this. And you will see that in the business type assets, if you look at the page, the second column to the right, if we look at the business type activities, and again, this is on the accrual basis, those are normally done on the accrual basis, you're looking at a $378,000 loss just in those two, in your business type activities, water, sewer, that type of thing. So yes, that is a concern of mine. Is it a big concern? Not yet, because the balance sheet or the statement of the statement of net assets is strong enough to absorb that this year. But in future years, if nothing's done to take care of this, then we're going to have a problem. And that's where the rate increase comes in, and that's where we have a situation where it looks like the board's already on top of this. They're already projecting out and realizing, hey, we have to do something to maintain our current fiscal status of being fiscally responsible by raising the rates.
I appreciate what you said as of June 30th, but your statement now is what I think the public needs to hear, is that
we were getting to that.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Because I think personally, and maybe a good portion of the community, you can look at our net assets, but you don't turn your net asset as a wastewater treatment plant into a cash flow machine. We would rather, at least some people in the community would rather not continue to mortgage ourselves, and that while the number looks good, it's an asset that the only way to create cash to keep going would be to mortgage it, essentially,
right,
which brings on more debt, and we can get into the debt portion later. But that's that's a management issue or a policy issue that the board needs to aggressively look at, and we are. But I don't want the public to think that what you're talking about is assets, which is really fixed assets for the most part, unless we're going to sell a couple of pickup trucks. And the only way to get anything out of that to pay for continuing losses. See, again, this is a snapshot. 378 maybe doesn't look like a lot, but if you do that for the past five years, you start talking about real money.
Right.
Yeah.
And
okay. Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions? We're diving into the next page already, so that's the problem with going forward. I don't know if everybody understands how this thing reads. It doesn't read like a normal income statement from top to bottom. You kind of start at the left, move over, and work your way down type of thing. Okay? And I'm sorry for the format, but it's the powers that be that are above me that have dictated this. So we try to make this as easy to read as possible. And then also something that we can do next year when we do the financial statements, and this is a large part due to Oceana Community Services District, they always wanted comparative statements. So if you're interested in those next year, let me know, because as we set these up, it's easy for me to set that up so that you can have the comparative statements right next to it.
I think that would be very helpful.
I don't like to do this on the first year because I didn't audit the year before. But they've found that it's a valuable tool for the reader to just look right over and see where they were last year without having to grab the report and figure out what page it's on.
To pick up where Director D'Amico left off, looking at the statement of activities on page 4, would you agree that this is probably the best statement for a customer in Cambria to look at in terms of the financial operations, the net financial operations of the district for the period ending June 30th, 2008, in terms of the deficits that we're running in the two operating accounts, the water account and the sewer account?
All right. I think this is the best statement to look at that. We also provide in the fund financial statements a breakdown as to the various funds, and they tie into the numbers for the business type activities. So there are some additional analysis, but this actually covers the whole district.
Would you also agree that looking at the business type activities column, the bracketed numbers that we see is something that is simply not sustainable over time?
Right. Yeah. Again, it's just what we were talking about. If we continue to do this every year, then it's going to affect the district.
This is a question that you may not be able to answer, but it does get to the point that Director D'Amico was making earlier. In terms of the depreciation numbers that you're carrying on the books, what is the year at which you started with depreciation for our capital assets, our big capital assets? That there must be a point in time at which somebody valued the assets and then started depreciating them for purposes of accounting.
Generally, that date is the date that the asset is put into service.
Well, some of the assets in this district were put into service so long ago that nobody probably can remember when they were put into service. And so what we've got is maybe a little bit of, and this is not a criticism, this is just a reality. What we may have is a bit of a distorted picture because some of these assets are in dire need of replacement. But if you simply look at the numbers, you would think that we're okay. But gosh, we've got water and sewer, well, water particularly, assets in this community that may be 50 years old, 60 years old, 70 years old, 80 years old, who knows? And so I'm sure that some of these assets should be considered fully depreciated and in need of replacement.
All right, there's a big discussion on infrastructure. What is an asset versus what is a liability? It could be considered a liability.
Exactly.
The thing that should have been done with the implementation of the Governmental Accounting Standards Board 34 that everybody's so aware of is for management to make an analysis of the infrastructure of the entity and budget or start budgeting when these assets are actually going to wear out, when they need to be replaced, how much the cost is going to be. A lot of times an engineering study will be conducted just to get a firmer idea as to how much it's going to cost to replace these assets. When I first started auditing way back many moons ago, I don't know if everybody remembers, about 25 years ago, City of New York, as far as their own infrastructure, and this part of the GASB 34 that should be analyzed as far as what we need to do, as far as starting the process of replacing these assets that we know are not going to last forever.
Yeah, for us, that's a major consideration. I think we need to face the reality of the aging nature of the infrastructure in our community, and we need to think hard about how we're going to replace that infrastructure.
So, and that could actually represent, once a study's done, I don't know if one has been done yet or...
I was going to say
yeah.
Black and Beach
analyst.
Yeah.
So that's something that needs to be done and quantified, and if there is an idea as to how much it's going to cost, maybe even start thinking about setting up a fund or
right.
Setting up something to get that replaced.
Good. Thank you.
The rest of the financial statements, I don't know how long we want to go. I can be here all day if you want to. I think, well, I'll hit the highlights. I made mention in the investment cash section that we're not sure where LAIF is. Again, I mentioned that earlier. I made a statement, because I haven't been able to get anything out of them as far as any of my other districts that I do, as to how their investments have weathered over the last 4 months. The other issue that I've read articles on, but I haven't seen anything coming out of CalPERS, is what is the severity of their losses in their investment funds that would dictate future pension contributions that need to be made to make up the differences for the losses that they incurred in the last 4 months. So that's another major issue. So we've got a few issues here that could make that glowing balance sheet turn into not so glowing balance sheet next year.
I'd like to address that point. In your statement here, on page 25, third paragraph of the pension plan indicates that our costs for 2008 were $675,770. The prior year from the audit statement on that was $531,171. That's a 20. So many provide 100% of the employee contribution?
Not too many. Okay. Now this.
What would you say is a normal kind of a contribution of if there's a shared, and when there's a shared contribution, what would you say is a normal?
It's typical of where you guys are at right now as far as the percentages above. It's typically, they want to keep it or try to keep it about the same as Social Security, Medicare, that type of thing.
Now, my question is, if it's 8%, the contribution by the
Participants, right.
By the participants.
I have some districts that don't even have the participants contribute. They do the whole contribution.
Which is what we do.
That's, my understanding it was 8%, wasn't it?
Well, that's the breakdown of the computation.
Turn on your mic, please, Alan. Yeah.
Sorry. The breakdown of what is contributed is 8% and 9% the employee share. It is correct that the district pays the full amount.
Pays 100% of
right.
that amount.
Yes.
And I
got okay.
my question to you in your experience is that normal?
Several districts still do that. However, with this change in the investments, and that was normal when PERS was keeping the cost down, their assets were growing and keeping up with inflation. So as a result, the percentage requirements were less, and that was the districts figured that that was okay to do that, to make the contribution for the employees. But I don't see it as much anymore.
Is it like the district's making no contribution of that part, or 50-50, or 25-75? What, in your experience?
They're all over the board as far as the districts that I handle right now. I mean, it's like I said, it's, some of them are still contributing all for the employees, and some aren't. I mean, some are splitting it half and half.
Okay.
So if I can, Director Cliff, so I understand the issue. The trend now then, because of the economic downturn and PERS investments.
And they also have a, I still call it an audit, whatever your terminology is now, your financial statement. In their financial statement, they indicated that for the last year, they had projected a rate of return of 7% on their investment. Mm. That was their projections based on how they set up some of their deals. Their actual return was minus 5.1, a 12% swing over just last year before the economy really went to,
right.
You know.
I've seen articles showing worse than that.
Yeah,
a lot worse.
And but that's as of June 08 when mission was accomplished, you know, and everything was still okay in the world. But as of that time, their assets, they're indicating their assets had decreased by $13.2 billion. And they made the comment, last part of the sentence in there was, that when these things occur, there could be expectations of greater assessments of the thing. Now, when I look at this, if I'm looking at an increase of 27%, when I'm trying to figure a budget for next year, not counting what they might come up with, is it your expectation that we should be expecting a number in excess of this $675,000 for budgeting purposes?
I think that's affirmative, based on what I've seen. And I can't get a definitive number out of PERS to make an estimate for that. I don't. Essentially, what they're doing is they're basing all their numbers on the actuarial forecast.
Right. And they do smooth it out over a few years.
Right.
That's true, too. They don't take each year individually.
So, I don't know how much damage.
But with people seeing 40% drops in their 401ks.
That was more like the percentage I was looking at, high in the mid-30s for what has dropped with PERS. So,
you know, even if they – am I looking at another 27% increase in this?
Again, PERS is the one – I have no idea what they've done.
I know, but we have to project the potential we're going to have to pay.
I think somebody needs to get on the phone with PERS and maybe try to get some numbers out of them.
What is the date by which they usually...
Professional opinions, I found numbers, and I'm trying to extract some professional opinions what we're going to have to look for in the future.
Normally, those come out in the management letter. So we have not... prepared a management letter, but yes, that will be in the management letter.
Okay, I understand.
So that might be the document to look for, the more opinionated type items.
And I agree with Director D'Amico that if you look at the item as the way it's reported on the item for the agenda today, and of course your report is an unqualified success.
Right, as of June 30th.
But I take that as an unqualified success of proper reporting procedures.
Right.
Not an unqualified success of our fiscal management.
Well, but then you have to look at the numbers, too, to see where you're at.
Yeah.
And we just discussed that with the difference between the balance sheet versus the income.
And I understand that from the standpoint of us looking at it here and going through it, but people... read it in the newspaper and see it and don't aren't really the best versed at looking at financial statements, see the words everything is okay. Then we come along and talk about rate increases, mm-hmm. and then we get our heads butchered.
Right.
In but a 218
I've got certain restrictions, too, that if I put a comment in here saying that you guys have a going concern, I don't think it's quite right because you're not at that level where it needs to be addressed. Going concern would mean that you're not going to make it through the next year, typically. So I don't see you're not at that level yet.
I guess
it's like the smoothing process that PERS calls it. We're smoothing it out. The last several years, you've built up enough reserves to handle a year like this. But if you don't do something about it in the near future,
well, but I guess what I would like to have seen or see in the final report is a, is an indication that we can't continue to eat into reserves like what has been listed before, and that there are concerns because of the economy and things that we're going to have to deal with, and concerns that, with the infrastructure
we,
that we're we going to have to
deal
with.
We could add a footnote. That's where it would go.
If those things are there, then we have some.
To me, the most important of the statements is the one that I referred to before, which appears on page 4. You have to look at the deficits that we're running in the two operating accounts, and then you have to consider the age of the infrastructure and the need for replacement of that infrastructure. These other considerations are extremely important as well. We all make budgets based upon certain assumptions, but in the economic downturn that we're experiencing right now, most of the assumptions that were made going into this fiscal year have completely been blown. PERS estimate for a 7% return on its investments is obviously completely out the window at this point. And that's a perfect example of how you just need to monitor things. You can't rely on the assumptions necessarily, and you've got to dig deeper to get to the truer picture.
And it is true that there's a projection that it's going to be several years that this kind of impact will continue.
Could be.
So it's incredible. And I think also that the trend of 1994 of having 13.4 million in reserves, and now we're down to 3.5. That's a critical trend, rather than just simply looking at the balance sheet and saying we have enough left for next year. So it's
what we could do, if you'd like. A lot of the agencies, normally how I present this would be through the management letter, but a lot of agencies would get upset if I put a lot of doom and gloom in here. But it sounds like you guys want, I can put a footnote in here that would explain what is going on here.
I think for purposes of operating in the current economic environment, having a report that lets us know what is, it is what it is, it is something that we really need. We are all experiencing fallout from the current economic climate. The district is not immune, and we just need to face the realities and
the
make policies accordingly.
The transparency, I think you said it right.
One thing, and it capital as of last year, and we actually still have projected capital projects of almost $8 million. So now if I asked you, if we took out an $8 million bond tomorrow, and this is where we are today, what do you think about that? I mean, you know, see, that's what's not in your report, which I understand professional and see, you know, your requirements under the reporting that you're doing or the analysis you're doing. But the and I appreciate what you said is that if that should be or should be in the management side, that's where something like that should be. Is saying that while if you're willing to live with a $300,000 loss or maybe a rate increase for that loss, you can hold your head above water. But if you're considering $8 million in construction over the next 4 years, you've got to do something a little more aggressive, if you will. Mm-hmm. And that's what I think we've tried to, and that's what we've been trying to struggle with ourselves. Because even in a management report, there's actually no discussion about where we are compared to where we're expecting to go.
Okay, the management discussion and analysis, that's the report that management prepares. I also prepare what they call a management report as far as the things that I've – suggestions I have for the district and items of concern that we found during the auditing process. That report has not been written yet. So, and it's all, only because I'm right in the middle of tax season.
Yeah.
I was kind of waiting for some info last Friday. So we kind of threw this together. So this we were scurrying to get this thing reviewed and get it ready for last Friday's board packet. So,
well, you know where we're coming from in terms of
I know exactly where you're coming from.
Yeah. And
I can do another footnote here. I don't mind doing it. It's just that a lot of times I get a lot of grief if I stick it all in here in this report when – there, another board would say, well, you probably should have put this in the management letter instead of putting it out.
President Sanders, I'd like to...
Yeah, sure. General Counsel.
I, for one, don't have any problem at all you telling us exactly what the circumstances is, even if we're doing it wrong. You know, feel free to that. I'll use the analogy of I could do my taxes on Intuit, I guess, for free. But I pay an accountant because he tells me every year you got to quit doing this or you got to start doing this, otherwise you're going to be in problems. And that's what's its
experience over the years. These types of things are addressed in the management letter he's still yet to draft,
right.
And that it can you can certainly ask for the detail and the issues to be addressed in that letter. And the reason I believe that that's been done is. The audited financials are used for a number of different purposes, including getting grants, and it's probably best to avoid things that could raise flags to those agencies that give money.
Sure. We're really talking about two different things here. We've got the audited financial statements, and any organization that we have to do business with on a financial basis may want to see our audited financial statements, and they always look for an unqualified opinion. And that's really what we strive for. But I think the consensus on the board here is, in the management letter, you really need to let us know where the issues are as you see them from the accounting profession point of view, and just give us straight advice.
Okay. Essentially, the typical tool for that is the management letter that
exactly.
we issue. So,
yeah, that's what
and
we're.
I think that's a good point. That yeah. if you are sending these are out there for getting grants and that sort, and if they see
sure.
your dirty laundry at the back of it, there may be a problem as far as getting that grant, that type of thing. That's why it's normally not put there.
Right.
If there's a going concern problem, generally you're not going to have a you aren't going to have a. Unqualified report. It's going to be a disclaimer, if not an adverse report.
Right.
So
understood.
Interesting thing when we had all this Enron deal going on, I looked at the reports that were issued for all the companies that were terminated or that went bankrupt that year.
Unqualified.
I think only one-third of them had a going concern issue the year before. So I do put them in when they're warranted. I think that there's some cushion here as far as you've got a few more years that you can still maintain these losses before it's actually going to affect the district. I think that, yes, even if you had to go out with an $8 million bond, this financial statement would still absorb it because the bond wouldn't be due within a year. So, yes, you could still get away with it.
Yeah, although... I think most rating agencies would look at the two operating funds, assuming the...
In the fund balance. And...
What page are you on, Director?
Page 18.
18.
Yeah, okay. The reason I'm bringing this up, that you give three different types of reservation. One is, the first one is reserve fund, where the portion of the fund has been legally segregated for specific purposes, and then you do two other ones. If we'd in fact taken that the $4 million and segregated it for a future project, according to what you've stated there, would you then have raised a red flag and say, hey, you guys can't afford to continue your business?
No, not necessarily. That, well, it would. First of all, the board can only put funds aside in a designated fund. The reserve is pretty much like a nonprofit. It's typically a restricted fund and legally bound to be held separate as a restriction. So, yeah, I mean, a lot of the organizations now are designating funds primarily to keep other agencies away from their funds. Believe it or not, when I look at this statement,
like the state
statement of net assets, you guys are actually a target here, even though you may not think so.
Yeah,
you guys are a target.
No, we've been keel-hauled before by the state. We understand.
They just because you're being fiscally responsible. I mean, you guys are still trying to be fiscally responsible,
right?
But the other agencies are so bad, they're going to look at your agency and say, well, they have some extra here. We can go after that. As a result, what a lot of boards are doing for that specific purpose, they are designating funds so that if somebody comes after your funds, you can say, well, wait a minute, we have to, we've set this aside for our own well-being. We have to set this aside for our infrastructure or whatever.
Right.
And as a result, it tends to keep them away from you, or at least you have an excuse as to why it's or set aside so that they can't put their hands on it. And we discussed that. I don't think there's been a... Didn't we discuss the designations? We discussed it during the audit, and that was, I thought, one of the board issues that was going to come up. Because there aren't a lot of designations here, and I think that... Any other questions?
Board members, any other questions?
Do you want him to come back when he prepares a management letter? Do you want to... So that he's here to answer your questions? I mean, I hate to
I think it would be
spot,
helpful,
but.
Yes. Well, I think...
Yeah. The mathematics
looks
good.
The okay. statement, I think, is fine. And you've done what the accounting profession and the standards that you operate under require. These other issues are fiscal management issues that we need to look at. So as far as I'm concerned, the statement is what it's supposed to be. Director DeMeco.
In the conscious of time, one thing I do want to clarify, I'm sorry, Crosby. Mr. Crosby's report, the document he prepared, I think we're saying is it looks acceptable. It sounds your discussions are proper and give us understanding of why what is in here is here. We still have to see you will prepare a management.
Right, that's
your management. What do you call it? Management report. The question I have, though, because I have more discussion, I don't know if it's for today since we have time, is the CCSD management discussion and analysis. I hope not to put the two things together and say they look good because there's issues in here which need to be addressed because you can't leave that there if he's going to come up and after this kind of great discussion we've had, there's no relative discussion here about
Understood.
Okay.
Yeah, I think the policy issues that we've been talking about need to be fully considered when he comes back with the management letter.
Yeah.
I'm speaking strictly about the numbers. And,
right,
you know,
the numbers, yeah. Okay.
Not about the issues that are in that portion of the document that you're talking about. And, in fact, there's no action required of the board here. We're simply receiving the report. But there may be a considerable amount of action that's necessary after we get the letter back from him.
But the MD&A is part of this report. So,
understood.
Mean,
but all we're doing is receiving the report.
Receiving.
In other words, all these issues would be.
I'd like to clarify that with Manager Rudak, because sure. The first nine pages, which are the Roman numeral pages, mm-hmm. There's at least three items that I believe that, at least from my perspective, would be unacceptable to have in this report, because they're either, I wouldn't say misleading, but they don't show the true picture of what's been happening here and what there's, I'm as well, right now you look on page 9, IX, and it's presented that our, as of June 30th, 2008, our debt is $4,699,490. Mm-hmm. If you go to Mr. Crosby's report, see, this is really only the principal. Mm-hmm. The real obligation we have is $5,900,000. Mm-hmm. And I find that, whether people like it or not, even if you say I got a $100,000 mortgage, it's going to cost you $220,000 to pay it off. I don't think you should think of it as only $100,000 to pay off, unless we're going to win a lottery with $5 million and pay it off tomorrow. See, so either it's a conflict with what's in the Crosby's report, or we should maybe at the minimum put an asterisk to say this is the principal amount only for the $1,300,000 of interest that's got to be paid. See the report.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying.
I mean, what was the purpose of putting that other than minimize our debt?
I think that he's reported the numbers in accordance with generally accepted accounting principles and the other accounting standards that apply to accountants. Now, the net result may be something that requires further analysis to get to the true picture, but
yeah.
I think the report complies with the accounting standards that
oh, his
are required.
Does.
Yes.
No, I'm saying, but our staff is putting together management discussion analysis, mm-hmm. and somebody might look at that and say, $4.7 million, that's not a lot, but it's really $6 million.
Well, here's my suggestion.
So, I mean, can we work something in the protocol between now and the next meeting to evaluate and maybe have some discussions?
We certainly can. And I think receiving the report is not tantamount to approving the report. Mm-hmm. We get the report, we've received it, we've discussed it, but at any time during the year, when we get the management letter, we can delve into these issues in a more focused way and make some policy decisions accordingly. Is that acceptable?
Yes.
Well,
okay.
And I'm, you know, on staff's behalf, I might add that if there's issues that they come through me, because all of those numbers, just as Mr. Crosby stated at the beginning of his presentation, have been verified by his firm, they come straight out of the documents that he prepared. Mm-hmm. So whatever concerns there are, just feel free to share them with me.
Okay. Yeah.
And we'll provide a response.
Absolutely. Any other questions of Mr. Crosby?
Well, I'm not sure if I've got questions. I've just looking through on page 11, we have bad debts of $513, which I think is pretty good for a district.
You didn't pay your water bill?
I wonder if it was my water bill or not. But I think that if the district can stay on track with such a low bad debt ratio in this coming year, then we're doing okay.
I think that was accumulation of a bunch.
Oh,
normally, there's no bad debts.
Okay.
What we do the first year audit is we beat the balance sheet to death. Mm-hmm. I'm not supposed to do that. My auditor says, why did you spend so much time on these little accounts? It's because generally those little accounts get missed every time somebody's looking at it because they're immaterial. So as a result, I think that's what we did there. That was an accumulation. So generally if there's a bad debt, there's usually a lien placed on the house.
I was just thinking in terms of the discussions of, well, I realize this was prior to the bad days, but discussions of people losing their homes and so on, you associate that with bills not being paid and so on.
Right.
So we've done fairly well up till now. The other thing I noticed on the page 7 of the management discussion, the fact we've, when you get rid of all the parentheses, we reduced our operating expenses by $444,000 last year, which I think is pretty good.
Again, next year we'll have comparatives so everybody can look at last year's.
Yes,
so.
Right. Thank you.
I had to search
go ahead.
Real wide to get an example of comparatives because it's generally not done. I think we're the only ones in the county doing comparative governmental financial statements because I haven't seen any other ones unless somebody's copying my format. But I looked all over the United States for a large firm that actually produced them, and I found some good examples, and so that's why I'm doing it. Because every year we get audited by a
of expenses in it. There's none for our government, general government activities. Is there a particular reason for that? Or
well, that's on another page. We have.
Well, but it's by department. It's not the same. It's not right. Quite the same. Like I was looking for where they're talking about salaries and wages when I was going through that PERS kind of thing. I found salaries and wages of the business type activities, but nowhere in here did I find salaries and wages of the governmental activities. I know other places where to find it. I just wondered if there was some.
Again, that's the reason behind the government-wide financial statements, because the general governmental funds have to be separated out from the business type.
Okay. So funds. It's just because of the difference between one being basically a business activity, others
right.
It's another set of funds, another set of accounting.
It's the old format. We still have the old format in here.
That's fine.
Any other questions or comments? Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much.
Appreciate it. We're looking forward to the management letter.
Okay.
There's no action required on this item except to receive the report, as we discussed. So I detect there's a consensus to simply receive the report, and we will be getting back into these issues when we get the management letter back from the auditor. With that, board members, it's now 2:30. Would you like to take a short break?
Excuse me. I'm sorry.
Yes.
President Sanders, you had one public comment request.
Oh, I'm sorry. I do. From John McKinnon. John?
For him to possibly listen to. Am I on? John McKinnon, Cambrian. On Roman numeral page 9, a statement's made. It's kind of, I mean, to me, it seems odd in an audit that it's made, and it doesn't really conclude with why it's made. And I'm probably just being paranoid, but it kind of concerns me. It talks about, it goes, Cambria is a residential coastal community and does not have any major industry. Commercial activities predominantly serves the tourist trade. The CCSD receives no revenue generated by the tourist trade from sales tax or transient occupancy tax, even though the restaurants and lodging establishments serving the tourist industry have a great impact on water use and the use of wastewater facilities. Why was that statement made? That's all. So maybe he can, in that report or
from that. In fact, the general manager may remember precisely, but my recollection is when we had the study done, it was about a $3 million matter. So
yeah.
$3 million of tourist taxes, if you will, and other sales taxes goes to San Luis Obispo. It doesn't come back to us directly. The county would argue that they provide a lot of different services that result in things being relatively equal, but
right.
You'd have to argue pretty forcefully to convince me of that.
Right.
Although not mentioned in this paragraph, for example, the fire department provides emergency medical service to many tourists who come to town. There are automobile accidents. There are other emergency medical issues that they respond to. The ratepayers and the taxpayers in Cambria pay for that. The theory behind transient occupancy taxes is that the taxes are supposed to offset the cost of providing those kinds of services.
Yes. Yeah.
So that's one part of the sentence. The second part of the sentence relates to impacts on water use and the use of wastewater facilities. And it's just a fact. Tourists come to town, they use water, they use the wastewater facilities. The bills for those services get paid. That is money that does come into the Cambria Community Services District. So maybe it's the coupling of all of those issues in one sentence that causes the concern.
Concern, yeah.
Maybe there's a better way to write the sentence.
Yeah, and I made some assumptions, and so, you know, possibly to get that out there of, yeah, we'd like to get some of that money back, you know, I guess that's where it's going with that. And
it's not meant to cast the blame on the tourist industry.
I'm paranoid, so.
No, one of the two items having to do with my concern. Yeah. And I like your explanation is excellent, and what I suggest that it's become two paragraphs.
Yeah.
If you want to talk about the tourism industry, by the way, the tourism is an industry. It's one of the biggest industries in this country. You would not be able to pay for the water and sewer because they are, I forget what the number is from last year when we went through this, but what is the commercial water use and how much bills do they pay? So whether it's, you don't get it from Jack when he checks in, but you get it from the McKinnons and what's the fellow owns the big motels and everything. They do pay their water bills. So, they are an essential part. We might argue, as we have in the past, about what potential their price should be compared to what a resident's price is. But you talk about a flat rate base. If we had to depend on the great conservation-minded, we do have great conservation-minded people here, 60 gallons a day per capita is not going to pay for the infrastructure we have.
It's the constant two-edged sword
that we
live with. Yeah.
But I don't, again, if you split this in two and talk about in two different things, I think it's fine. But putting it all together like that does seem to throw a dark cloud.
Thank you for enlightening me, too. Thank you for the discussion.
I have no more requests to speak on this item. So with that, it's now 2:35. We'll take a 10-minute recess. Come back to order. We are on regular business, item number 8, and we will move to item 8B, which is clarification of sewer relief policy, and I believe we have a report from the general manager.
This is the discretionary authority that was granted the general manager with regard to prior water bill modifications. When customers came, they had outside leaks, the water didn't go down the sewer. The direction from the board to me was, okay, you know, we've approved these in the past that you waive the, just use the average sewer charge and waive the rest, or, you know, refund them the rest. Well, that's fine. We've done that since that policy was, or that authority was granted to me. But I now have the unique opportunity to have a request from a customer who wants it for a second time. Now, within the current policy requirements of the water bill modification policy, you get a one-time water bill mod per property. And so staff's interpretation was, okay, then that means you get a one-time sewer relief because otherwise this might go on ad infinitum. So I'm looking for your direction.
It would be unfair to charge that customer for sewer charge. So oftentimes, obviously, there are leaks. Maybe the service line from the water meter into the house may leak. That water will run off into the yard, maybe into the street, but not get into the sewer system. So what the general manager has highlighted for us is a circumstance where a rather significant water customer in the community has experienced two of these leaks where water did not get into the sewer system. And so there is a need for clarification of the policy. Are we going to allow the relief that is requested every time there's a leak, regardless of whether it's the same customer or not? And that basically frames the issue. Any comments from board members?
Yeah, I do. I believe the staff should have a very broad discretionary ability. They have the judgment. They're talking to the customers. They have the history. In previous cases, they've done a lot of investigation before they've made their decision. And we get one side of it, or we get several pieces of it. I also remember last month there was an issue with the Meltons, which was I think they've been here since 1978, and they've been excellent customers, and they went away, and then they got billed, and the fees went up to like a couple hundred dollars. We don't have all the data, and I think that I'm confident that the staff can handle it in a very equitable way and not hamstring them with a whole bunch of little benchmarks. You can't do this. You can only do it once, one and a half times, two times, whatever. That's just my opinion.
So, in other words, if what you're suggesting, Director McKinnon, is that if there's a second or maybe even a third circumstance regarding a customer where water has leaked but not gone into the sewer system, it may be perfectly okay to grant the relief requested, but the staff would have to determine, is the customer trying to take advantage of the system?
Precisely.
So okay.
Just to administer policy, and that would be my fault.
So Director D'Amico.
I think, from what I hear, would you just say to eliminate paragraph?
To clarify, this is strictly for sewer, not water.
Yeah.
Is there a second to the
second?
Motion? Is there any discussion on the motion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Does that give you the clarification you're looking for? Good. Okay. Item 8C is consideration of appointment of Water Conservation Citizens Committee, and I would like the general manager to provide a brief report, please.
This is the item that you asked at last month's meeting to bring back for discussion, basically because we introduced those potential water conservation alternatives or emergency water supply alternatives, including the declaration policies, the water conservation surcharge rates, and other options. And you wanted, somebody had mentioned, and you all, through consensus at that meeting, said, let's bring this back for discussion this month. So here we are.
Thank you. I would like to expand on that very briefly. It was my intention when I suggested this that the scope and jurisdiction, if you will, of this proposed committee be limited to consideration of options available to the district in the event we literally run out of water. My suggestion for formation of this committee was prompted by two things. First of all, if you recall, shortly before the last board meeting in January, we were confronted with a situation where the well levels had fallen to a rather low level. And just as a reminder to the community, there is only a certain level to which those wells can fall before we get what is called saltwater intrusion. And once that happens, those wells could be completely ruined in terms of a source of potable water for the community. Given the very limited resources we have in terms of water, I think it's prudent that the district, through some mechanism, examine the prospect of what we do in the event we cannot use those wells for fear of inducing saltwater intrusion by pumping them to a level that is below the margin of safety. The second consideration that prompted the suggestion, it's a real-time issue that I think we really need to plan for, and I think we would be not doing our jobs as we have been elected to do unless we take a hard look at this issue. That was the purpose of suggesting the formation of a committee. And the item is on the agenda today if we are going to go forward with the committee idea to consider the manner of appointment of the members of the committee. With that, gentlemen, I open it up for discussion.
I do have a clarification. You know, one of the things you come into is the environmental problems, the fact that you're about to dry up the creek. And would that be a part of the discussion? Because it's quite involved, and it's one that we certainly puzzle ourselves about how to solve that. Yeah.
We do have certain obligations under the federal and state Endangered Species Acts to maintain the habitat of certain species that inhabit the two watersheds that we draw our water supply from. So in addition to the amount of water available from those two watersheds, we've also got the legal consideration that is imposed upon us by the state and federal Endangered Species Acts. Director D'Amico.
Yeah, my understanding, and I think you've explained the purpose of the committee. I want to make sure, though, that the events that will unfold, whether it be a drought, a very dry summer, failure of some equipment, mm-hmm. it would be the board who would declare an emergent condition. But what we're asking the public to do, or this committee, whoever it might be, is should that happen, what is the procedures and the policies and the stages it would go through?
Correct.
Right? Okay.
That is correct.
Yeah.
It's for the committee to grapple with these issues, report back to the board, and then it's up to the board to consider the report from the committee and determine which of the recommendations, if any, would
be followed. And it could be like, I think I forget what the original one was last month. I didn't bring that packet, but there were like six items listed. What we hope to come back with is a more rational or a best thoughts of stage one, this is what you do, rationing. And then, you know, determining
sources of water. And we don't have the luxury of being in close proximity to other sources of water. So given that we constantly find ourselves in somewhat of a precarious position, given the rather extended drought, even though we've had recent rainfall, we're still in a rain deficit in a very significant way. Director McKinnon.
In full transparency, I'm not a big fan of committees. Something that's not critical and takes a lot of our time, that's a good committee enterprise. Something that's beyond the scope of what we have internally is also a good reason to have a committee. What I look at is our staff, Brian Bodie, Bob Grecians, Jim Adams, Mike, Ben Bauer, Frank, Peter. These are all critical folks that really know as much about water and some of the difficulties in such a situation as you propose, and I think it's an excellent premise. I mean, in case we lose by one reason or another our water supply. But before we go outside and entertain, I'd say laymen, I say that in a very positive way, I think we should solicit suggestions from the entire community. We're all conservationalists. Otherwise, we wouldn't be living in Cambria. We'd go places that have a lot of water. But I feel it's almost premature to go beyond the scope of our internal capabilities in coming up with a proposal. And just my opinion.
Let me respond briefly if I can. Obviously, the ultimate solution is to introduce another water supply into the community, mm-hmm. a reliable water supply.
Mm-hmm.
That has the potential for making the issue moot. Our district engineer, Bob Gressens, I think is spending more than full time on that issue. And from my perspective, to expect him to the rest of the staff as well. the priority, it seems to me, is to find the ultimate solution, to get the ultimate solution built and online. What we do in the interim, if we're faced with the prospect of running out of water, is something that I think we have to deal with.
I mean,
I would like to see the staff just go full bore on the ultimate solution.
I would, too. But to use your words, I believe this is one of our charges. This is one of our gut responsibilities. And if staff says, and Frank and Peter say, that's we're too full, then, of course, we have to look elsewhere. But I don't think it's an overly difficult proposition to accept, unless they say they can't do it. We're talking about a lot of time between when I look at Bob's schedule for desal. I'd like that expedited if that was possible. But certainly, this is a doomsday situation that would that could include earthquake. Could, as Frank said, something breaks.
Absolutely.
Independent of desal, if we had desal working, it's still an appropriate scenario that has to be addressed. And I just think that the strengths we have internally and on this board should be the first level of exploration before we go somewhere else.
Other board members?
Well, I appreciate that. I think it's a good – but we do have a document that has been prepared by management and staff, and I'm not saying that it's – we're trying to throw it out. What we're trying to do is – does it need to be perfected a little? Should there be a different prioritization? And you got to remember, the people that we're talking to, which is the community, they're the ones that are going to take the brunt of it. While I appreciate it, I've been on the operations side. I make decisions. Sometimes you don't really take into account all the effects it has. And that's why if we had a group of people looking at it from the perspective of the user, sometimes they come up with answers that may even surprise you at what they're willing to do in an emergency.
Right.
I think we've all seen that. In an emergent condition, you know, the public reacts a lot better than I think a lot of people give them credit for. And I think this is a perfect example. They may come up with, say, why do you...
Having so-called stakeholder direct involvement in terms of building a consensus within a community for how you deal with an issue that would hit everybody in this community extremely hard is a very beneficial way of moving forward. My experience on the board, and I think Peter's experience as well, has been that when you involve citizens directly, you tend to get a much broader consensus about moving forward. I'll give you an example. Some years ago, the board instituted the water surcharge program. It admittedly was done under some rather emergency conditions and on the fly. It is extremely inequitable. Many of the issues that should have been addressed were not addressed, and so as a result, we have a program that is no longer really palatable. And the kind of the retrospective look at things would lead you to the conclusion that we would have been much better off had we gotten a group of citizens together from various portions of the community to wrestle with these issues, and I think we would have come up with something that is much more equitable. I can look out and see members in the audience, and I can tell you where they're coming from on the water surcharge issue. There's one member in the audience who has a relatively large family. There's nothing in the water surcharge program that takes into account in an equitable way the size of families.
Yeah.
I see another member of the audience who is a businessman who believes that the water surcharge program inordinately impacts the business community, particularly the restaurants and the motels. I could go on and on. If you take these,
what will happen and what the prices and penalties will be. But if we take this approach of having people who are very specifically affected and give them the opportunity to say, how am I affected and is there a possibility you could think of doing it this way? We start with an amount of knowledge that's different than if we simply decide what it's going to be and then say, how about this one, guys? And then they say yes or no, and you know, you get into all kinds of arguments there. I think it's a resource. This isn't going to happen to us this month or next month, and so we do never have some know. Time. And
you never know.
Well, the manager says we got till June. She's guaranteeing till June. And so, with the, you know, we've got some time. It would be a resource for those people who are very specifically affected. And if we put those people together, I think they will come up with some ideas that then make our job a lot easier, makes the staff's job a lot easier in terms of laying out what the rules could be. So I'm in favor of letting the stakeholders have the first shot at it.
I'm also continually amazed at the level of expertise on a whole range of issues in this community, water issues being one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think drawing on that expertise is a prudent thing to do. I understand there are different ways to do it. We could have people troop up to the microphone in public session and give us their opinions, but if you have those types of people involved in a in an intense work environment in a committee, I think you tend to get more value out of their expertise than if they're simply testifying before us or trying to make their input through the staff.
I surrender.
I think the.
Well, I appreciate that, Director McKinnon.
I think there is something we have to do to consider, and this is what Alan brought up, was the fact that staff are working hard on the final solution, and just how much of their time are we going to bleed off for this? Because that's the thing I really am concerned about.
Yeah, I agree. Well, with that, since the white flag favor one segment of the community over another, and so if there's a way to do that, I would certainly be open to suggestions.
CCSD staff.
Well, the staff should be involved as well as a resource to the committee.
Obviously, each one of us could pick two. And then we would kind of try to have to figure out whether they bring them together or not. It might be to say people who are interested, who want to represent a particular group, make it known to the general manager, and then we could look at that list.
That's fine.
And come up with people that represent different areas.
Could have a committee.
Could have a committee. We got. Let's go back to
the committee the committee.
Let's go back to Frank and Peter for that.
Right. I'm not wedded to any particular process, and that one makes as much sense to me as each board member appointing to. Director D'Amico.
Well, I just then if they'll be able to see this on the telecast. I don't know if we can put it on a website or something to ask for it. So what we'd be asking for, I believe, would be obviously name and address and potential background and experience, in the sense that and I gave it, I had some discussions with a couple of people, and I think, first of all, it's got to be an odd number because we do want to have a consensus from them. We don't want to be tiebreakers in this, as far as I'm concerned. So if there was we need somebody in a residential community, the business community, the business could be restaurants because they're a little different than motels, possibly. Mm-hmm. But so if we could split that, and then whether it's any one of us board members could be called in at some period of time, assuming that the charge is, what, come back in 4 months or 3 months, and one of the board members, and I would be fine. I would be glad to talk to him, and I don't know about Peter. I know he's already on 5 committees. So, or obviously even staff. I'm sure Brian would be a call, and he, well, anyone else he chose. But we do want to make sure that it's not don't get me wrong, it's not an issue of whether how bad are the pumps in it. It's we're saying something's happened. We're getting close to something. We need to find out what do we do. And again, we don't want to. We're going, and maybe in 2 months or whatever the board meeting would be, we could have an interim report from the committee, their spokesperson, spokespeople, and then we could follow up after that. So I think 5 would be the minimum. 9 would be good. And, because even they need alternates in case of timing.
Yes, and perhaps we can get a little bit of help from the Cambrian, if she's listening, in terms of in terms of a
minimum 9
would be good. No, I'm in terms of alerting the alerting the community that if we go in this direction, that the district will be taking applications, if you will, for appointment to the committee. Let me suggest that the Utilities Committee sift through the applications and make sure that we're getting a broad cross-section of the community and then make a recommendation to the board for appointment of the committee members at the next meeting, which would be in March.
One thing we need to do is, because we may, it's easy to get retired people to get together. If you're going to get the people who are part of the working community, they're limited in the hours that are available.
Sure.
So we need to come up with some idea of when they could meet,
Yeah. And that would be for the Utilities Committee to consider. And let me also suggest that the size of the committee be put in your laps to consider, so that you can bring back at the March meeting a complete package of the size of the committee and the recommended appointees to the committee. Is that satisfactory with the board?
Yeah.
Great. Thank you.
By the way, we'd be interesting to hear from the rest of the board who you think the stakeholders are, just so we don't miss anybody. Yeah.
Yes, and let me close this item by saying that we're not looking for a reinvention of the wheel. We have a very aggressive water conservation program. We've got a number of things in place that enable us to save water probably to a greater extent than any community in California. What we are really looking for, you bet. Good. I think that provides enough direction to the staff. So with that, we will go on to the next item under regular business, which is 8D, status report on advanced life support equipment aboard CCSD Fire Department engine number 5791. And I'll have the general manager open up the presentation by the staff.
Okay, so we provided a report to show and come back to you with a rough estimate of approximately $20,000 would be the pricing to outfit the CCSD Fire Department engine 5791 with the, I'm going to use the acronym ALS, which stands for Advanced Life Support Capability, and that's for our paramedics that are working during CCSD hours if they arrive on the scene first to be able to administer this type of aid. I gave in the background in the discussion that we entered into the agreement and gave you a copy, especially for those who weren't here at the time that this interagency agreement was adopted in August of 2006. It's attached, and it outlines how the CCSD Fire Department personnel who are licensed paramedics would function basically as an extension of the healthcare district's ALS provider operations. When it first went into place, it was a six-month, let's try it and see if it works. It worked, and then there was a basic letter that came out from the county, that the county, Slo County EMSA, which is the Emergency Medical Services Authority, that it would be permanent, and that came out in 2007. We did provide the board at the time with an updated staff report because they asked us to come back after we'd been doing it for quite some time, and you'll see that from Captain Bill Hollingsworth, dated June 4th of 07, that shows the staffing days for ALS and how many ALS calls there were during those days of 125 days from August 2006 through May of 2007. They documented 20 ALS calls. Now, there's been discussion back and forth, and you've heard from Chief Miller and others that there's differences of opinion between the healthcare district staff and our staff as to what they think an ALS call was or how it was, but this is how it was documented and this is how it was publicly reported. In September of 2008, the decision was made by the healthcare district to remove the equipment and discontinue the services by the CCSD paramedic staff to provide these ALS services because the healthcare district wanted to use that equipment on a backup ambulance. The healthcare district staff right now staffs two ambulances full-time, and then made that he's been looking into liability and workers' comp disability issues related to our district purchasing and maintaining ALS equipment that would be used by our licensed paramedics. And that he looked at his action of removing that not necessarily as a discontinuance or a termination, but as a suspension of their interagency agreement until he got a formal response back. He states that he's continued to explore the issue, and once he gets a written decision as to whether or not there's coverage that can be extended through the arrangement, he'll let me know once he shares it with his board of trustees at the healthcare district. He wanted me to advise the board today that they are continuing to explore it, and they'll let us know as soon as they get an answer, and that the agreement remains, as far as he's concerned, remains in effect and has actually been utilized on several occasions, including the recent structure fire on Stewart Street. Now, I found that odd because we don't have any equipment on the engine, so I don't know how they used our paramedics. So when I got that response, I didn't have a chance to catch up with you because you weren't in the office, so I thought maybe you could expand upon that.
I was puzzled by it as well. I didn't know what he was referring to unless some of their CCHD personnel responded to assist us with the fire, which I was unaware of.
So that's where it is from staff's perspective.
The issue of insurance and liability has been kicked around for months. Mm-hmm. It doesn't take that long to get a handle on the insurance issues. So I'm mystified by this continuing saga of, you know, the quest for an answer to the liability problem.
Were you on the co-location committee? You and Peter?
I was.
You know, that was an issue when we were meeting, and as far as I can recall, Mark jumped in there because I've been on that committee for 4 or 5 years of my employment here.
Right.
That was resolved. That was the reason why we were able to enter into the agreement, because it wasn't a big issue. Now, the only thing I can say to that, not necessarily just in defense of it, but I'm speculating, is that because it's more of a permanent basis now, that's what he's trying to confirm, rather than just having that temporary, that 6 month, you know, type of agreement from the EMSA.
So. It's a matter of a telephone call.
I'd like to weigh in here. After spending a year as chairman of the Emergency Medical Services Committee and doing a lot of studying,
That's correct.
And was not on the fire truck when a paramedic was not in service.
That's correct. It was intended to be portable in that if it was needed on another backup ambulance, it could be delivered to, and I don't recall that situation ever arose, but it was intended to be, you know, portable in that we could transfer it over to an ambulance if they needed it.
So if we didn't have it on our engine, it was stored there at the fire station? lock cabinets?
Correct.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, locked up if there wasn't a medic on duty.
Now, let me ask you in your opinion about survivability on a patient. Is it more important to have a fully qualified and equipped paramedic there within 4 to 5 minutes, or is it more important to have an ambulance there?
Obviously, the answer is that the sooner they're going to get resuscitative expertise on the scene, the better their probability and their outcome will be.
My experience is that I've never seen them drive an ambulance into the house to resuscitate a patient. That's the work of a paramedic.
Yeah,
right?
Typically in the advent of a cardiac arrest situation, the paramedics will work that call at the scene until they are able to stabilize the patient. And when and if, then they package for transport.
Yeah. I always love that word, package, that they use. the normal case is the ambulance sits outside for 5, 10, 15 minutes while the person's being taken care of and set up, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. And Captain Hollingsworth's report of 2007, he indicated there was at least 20 cases over that 10-month period where people received an initial advanced life support treatment from a health service approved firefighter paramedic operating from a fire truck, right?
Yes, that's true. There was considerable controversy over that issue in that the healthcare district was looking at it in terms of only when the ambulance was not available.
Okay.
Which I believe happened on one or two occasions throughout that first year. But with the statistics that we have indicate when...
The difference between a paramedic, in survivability or quality of life, if they're arriving 1 minute before the ambulance paramedic arrives and begin providing services, is that a benefit to the patient, or is 2 minutes or 3 minutes? Or
I don't know if you're aware, the NFPA has a recommendation that for initial emergency response, and that's that your first responding emergency unit should arrive on the scene within 4 minutes 90% of the time. And a lot of that is predicated upon the survivability of a cardiac arrest patient or someone who is not breathing. The American Heart Association has come up with statistics that irreversible brain damage starts to occur at that 4 minute mark. So a lot of that recommendation for that 4 minute response capability comes not only for fire response but comes from that EMS response as well. So yes.
A minute or 2 minutes or 3 minutes added to that time makes a difference.
Absolutely, a huge difference, yeah.
And his report covered up till June of 2007, and those were where you were keeping statistics. And I understand you haven't kept statistics once it became permanent. But is it your opinion that as a general rule, the fire truck arrives first?
We keep statistics on our response times, and the healthcare does as well. The two different dispatching agencies are different, mm-hmm. and that's where the rub comes in. But I can tell you that, our fire agency arrives first a considerable percentage of the time.
Okay.
Like well over half.
I would say probably 75% of the time, yeah.
Okay.
At least that.
And we currently, as firefighters, we currently have 4 firefighters that are qualified paramedics.
4 paramedic level firefighters, and that doesn't include my certification. That's line personnel that are employed by our agency, the CCSD, and are employed by the CCHD as well as paramedics.
So most of these are also employed by CCHD.
Yeah, all of them are.
Okay, so they're both firefighter paramedics. They're also ambulance paramedics.
Right. They work part time with the ambulance as well as our agency.
Okay, today, if a fire engine arrives first on the scene, what can that firefighter do, even if they're a qualified paramedic?
They're limited to basic life support, just the same as any EMT or first responder, first aider would be.
Okay.
Yeah, they can't.
The healthcare district.
At the healthcare district, yes.
So he's fully qualified as a paramedic, probably the most qualified, theoretically, in this area. That was way I would understand. And you don't need to give a personal opinion one way or another.
That's hard to do with personnel issues like that.
Yeah, but by status as director of operations of things, okay.
Yeah.
Anyhow, if today he arrives on a fire truck to an incident of a heart attack or a stroke, he can't do anything such as...
No, he would be limited to basic EMT or first responder.
And the reason he can't do that is, first of all, he doesn't have the equipment.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. And secondly, it's against the law?
Well, the agreement that we have has to be, you know, cooperative between the healthcare district. The healthcare district is the authority for advanced life support in the community of Cambria. So unless they've extended that to our agency, then it would not be...
Would not be lawful for
lawful for our people to.
So if Jason Melendez appears on a fire truck at that scene of that heart attack, he can't use his skills or his abilities to help that person beyond what any normal firefighter could.
He would be limited to the basic EMT level.
If he arrives at that exact same circumstances wearing a uniform of the healthcare district, he can use all of his skills, he can use all of his abilities, he can use all of that equipment to help save somebody's life.
That's
right?
Correct. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, if he's working on the ambulance and responding on the ambulance at the time, yes.
But if he responds on a fire truck, he can't.
Correct.
That's the ridiculousness of this situation.
And if I can add to that, Director Clift, relating back to the statistic we were given on which of the two agencies gets to an emergency medical call first, 75% of the time, the Cambria Fire Department arrives first.
I've seen that personally because I live right on Hillcrest, and when the noise starts up the hill, I always look to see whether CDF beat
per pay period.
So it's about $100 a month.
That's paid through. We're a pass through, so the healthcare district was reimbursing us as we sent them an invoice pay period quarterly. I think is what we did it.
So I guess you know what brings the question to me is what's the reason for the healthcare district to reduce the level of service is providing this community? And the only thing I can think of is monetary. So maybe it's $300 a month or something like that, $300 or $400.
That is not the issue. The issue is to have their backup reserve equipment stocked, fully stocked with ALS equipment.
So it's not $300 or $400 a month.
No. Okay. No, they continue to pay the stipend, which is of a concern for me, because then you're creating a situation where you have a medic on duty being paid as such who's not capable of functioning to that level, which in essence could have its own liability tied
now,
to it.
Now the other excuse is that there's an urgent need for the equipment on their backup ambulance. Now, do they really believe they just bought two new $100,000 ambulances?
Correct. That was at the time it became an issue with them to move the equipment to the reserve ambulances at the time they got their two new ambulances.
But what they're telling me is they believe that these two brand new ambulances could be broken down or needing maintenance, and they have to put two reserve ambulances in force at a time, these two are broken down, at a time when you have a dual call. the odds on that are so infinitesimal. And secondly, your very first answer to me was this equipment is portable, right?
Correct.
So they could move that broken down $100,000 ambulance, the information, the stuff out of that into that older ambulance, correct?
Yeah, that was the way the program was initially designed, was for that capability, to be able to move it over to a reserve ambulance if it was needed.
Now, we've also offered to pay the $20,000 for the equipment on our...
We were studying that. Hasn't been any action taken on that yet because...
We've discussed it, but they haven't indicated they would take us up on it.
Correct, yeah.
Okay.
It always gets back to that insurance issue, that workers' comp.
Life. Fire. That's what they're afraid of. That's what it's all about. It's a turf war for their little kingdom. And it doesn't matter to them what additional services could be provided to the citizens or what monetary savings could be achieved by cooperating with other fire or rescue services. All that matters to them is they keep total control and keep this community in the dark of what they're doing. Just in case I didn't make my opinion clear.
what do you really think, Director?
Yeah.
Let me say in closing, I have the highest regard for the paramedics that work for the healthcare district, and I have the highest regard for the paramedics that man those fire trucks and work for the fire department. And believe it or not, in all my studies of that year of working, this community has been provided by those paramedics the very, very best emergency service for any rural community in the state of California, and I would bet across the whole United States. Do you know that according to the emergency medical officer down in the county, we would not even qualify for one ambulance stationed here if we didn't have our health care district? And we have four fully equipped ambulances with the possibility of a full-time fire truck running and two full-time crews. That, believe it or not, Paso Robles only has two ambulances that cover all of Paso Robles out to Shandon and all the way to Heritage, Nacimiento, and that whole area. Two ambulances. We have the best service possible, and those paramedics have provided it. Having said that, I have nothing but contempt for the majority of the board members of the healthcare district, because what they've done is put the lives of the citizens of this community at risk, because they have removed that equipment from people who are fully qualified and have the ability to be there. And that's my position. I don't know what we can do right now, except that I could ask every one of you out there and every one of you in the television audience to write the Cambrian, write the editor of the Cambrian, and express your disgust at what's going on, because the reduction
to agencies is very good.
That's absolutely the case, and I agree with you 100% there.
I was very concerned about that issue when this thing took off, that this was going to trickle down, it was going to affect the product, the end-level product to the citizens. And everything that I've seen indicates that in spite of the administrative struggles, it's still a quality product on the street, and the medics continue to work well together in spite of the issues that we're looking at. So
and,
I just want to make
and
that
And I
comment.
Think that's an important point, and I think that's the point people ought to know, is that all those people that are out there providing that service deserve our greatest respect.
Absolutely. But the issue remains, we have the unbelievable circumstance of having a fully qualified paramedic on a Cambria Fire Department truck who gets to the scene of an emergency medical call and cannot render emergency life support, advanced life support for that patient. And as you pointed out, Chief Miller,
It's those first 4 minutes that are critical in terms of saving a patient's life. This is government at its very worst. It's just beyond comprehension to me. And we have got to find a fix for this.
Some of the other issues that concern me as well are a mass casualty situation. You know, if we had an earthquake here or something where we would need multiple units in the field, you know, having the equipment spread out would be more logical. If there was a situation where an ambulance were to be involved in a wreck during a response or for some reason be delayed by a tree that fell in the road or who knows what, that could really make the difference there of having more gear in the field and more capability out there. I think it's just a lot better service to the community.
Let me suggest that we really need, for the benefit of the community and for the sake of saving lives, and I don't think I'm overstating it, we need to come to grips with this issue very quickly. We're either going to have a cooperative arrangement with the healthcare district regarding liability is an issue that can be resolved one way or the other very quickly, and I'm quite frankly sick and tired of hearing about the liability issue. It's a simple legal slash insurance problem. Either it can be resolved in our favor or it can't, and we really need to have an answer.
From an insurance standpoint, if I was the on the board of the healthcare agency, I would be looking to raise my directors and officers' liability insurance, because the first time some person is denied care and is injured because of it, the citizens of this community are going to be paid some big legal fees.
Yeah, it's just abominable that we have all of these resources and we can't use them. Particularly when you put it in the context of saving someone's life. So we really need to get our arms around this and figure out whether we're going to continue in a cooperative mode with the healthcare district or whether we're going to strike out on our own. Any other comments or questions from board members?
Yes.
Director Chalker.
Yeah, there's a, I was just looking at the first paragraph about the Slo County EMSA. They've approved the, on a permanent basis for us to be involved. But I'm wondering if that would be taken back possibly.
It's through this agreement. This agreement was permanent. So it's not that we were opted in to be the healthcare ALS service provider, but it's to continue this agreement.
Yeah. We would have to consider whether this agreement, under the circumstances we find ourselves in, is viable anymore.
Right.
And if we conclude that it's not, then we would have to go back to the county health officer and see if we can get permission from the health officer to provide paramedic service from the fire engines.
Yeah, I would be concerned if we were to invest the $20,000 and then have the permission taken away.
We'd have to have the permission first, absolutely. I have a request to speak on this item from Amanda Rice. Amanda?
Thank you, President Sanders, Amanda Rice. This issue, because one of their mandates is to ensure efficient provision of government services, and the overlap isn't perfect because the healthcare district covers a larger area than the CCSD does, but I don't think it's something that couldn't be overcome, and petitioning LAFCO might be a way to get over the turf war.
Good point. Thank you.
Thank you.
Is anybody else in the audience interested in speaking on this issue? Seeing none, board members, what's your pleasure here? Director Clift, you've kind of taken the lead on this. Do you have a suggested direction?
Well, my suggestion is that the only way that that the issue will get up and be dealt with is for the light of public opinion to be shined on the situation. and let people decide whether they want to continue the way it is or force people into making decisions.
In the meantime, let me suggest that we have a further status report on this issue on the March agenda.
No, I have no problem with that.
With a report on specifically what's being done about the issues that we've discussed, the liability slash insurance issue, and whether the agreement that we have with the healthcare district continues to be viable or whether we should strike out on our own, and what the issues would be if we do, both fiscally and in terms of permission, if you will, from the county health officer. Okay, board members, the last item on the agenda is to revise the 2009 committee assignments. I'm very pleased to report that Director Clift has stepped up to the plate and agreed to be the board's appointee to the Forest Committee. So we can cross that one off. And Director Chaldicott has volunteered to be the board's liaison to the PROS Commission. And with those two slots filled, I think all of the bases are covered. So the only thing that I would ask for is a motion to approve those appointments, and then we're done with that issue.
So moved.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to ratify the appointments of Director Chaldicott as the liaison.
Thank you, President Sanders. Seems like I was just here. Thank you for allowing me the time.
Deja vu.
Deja vu. This time, I am speaking as the chair of the North Coast Advisory Council, which is made up of members who are elected or appointed to advise District 2 Supervisor Bruce Gibson on issues of planning, development, and county ordinances of interest to the North Coast. There are 8 elected members, 4 are elected in odd years, and 4 are elected in even years. And the 4 areas that are going to be up for election this year are San Simeon, Park Hill, Area 5, which is the area between Highway 1 and Main Street to Windsor and includes Air Force housing and the fire station and the library and the Green Spaces New Park and Tin City, and Area 7, which is the southernmost part of Lodge Hill at the includes Top of the World and Strawberry Canyon. If you live in one of these areas and you are interested in joining the council to represent your neighborhood, applying to be a candidate is very easy. You simply complete a condition of service form, which is available on northcoastadvisorycouncil.org, or you can call me at 927-4191. The deadline to apply for a position is March 18th, which is the same date as our regular meeting next month. The election is held the first Tuesday in May, and the time commitment is 1 meeting, 2 hours a month, every month except December. And if you choose to serve on a committee, that's one additional meeting of 1 hour. If you want more information, you can check out the website, northcoastadvisorycouncil.org. Or you can give me a call. Again, my number is 927-4191. I appreciate you allowing me the time to get that announcement out.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Amanda, appreciate it. Is there anybody else who would like to speak under public comment? Seeing no one, we are adjourned to closed session.